All right, please be seated. Good morning, everyone. This morning we have East Troy High School here with us. If you could please stand up so we can say hello to you. Oh, wow. Big group. Nice to see you. I'm glad you had a nice travel day. Hopefully you have a good, safe one on the way back. It's my understanding you're not staying around to meet with a justice today, but that's fine, too. We hope that you enjoy the proceedings, and we welcome you here. All right, go ahead and have a seat. First case is 21 AP 142CR, State versus Charles W. Ritchie. Appearances, please. Good morning. Good morning. All right. The lineup is 25 minutes, followed by 30, and 5 minutes on rebuttal. Go ahead. Please proceed.
If it pleases the court, counsel, I'm here this morning basically to impress upon you two things that I possibly did not cover fully in my brief. The first thing is, this is not a mind-run, reasonable suspicion case. In a typical case, we want to know what the officer knew at the time of the stop, what moved the officers from a hunch over to reasonable suspicion, and usually the more building blocks or puzzle pieces we get us from the hunch to the reasonable suspicion. In this case, the deputy gave five identifiers to Officer Meyer. Be on the lookout for a Harley Davidson, traveling on Alderson Street, going north from Jelinek, driving erratically, and a high rate of speed. He had five clues of what to be on the lookout for. But Officer Meyer stops a Harley Davidson traveling east on Schofield, which is not driving erratically or at a high rate of speed. So Officer Meyer ignores those four details and seizes here. The only clue she has is the Harley Davidson. And she did not know it was a Harley Davidson until she called in the license plate registration and was told it's a Harley Davidson motorcycle. So this makes this case a little bit different than a lot of the reasonable suspicion cases because these other clues kind of fall off.
Can I ask a question? Sure. I didn't catch this in the facts. You said she didn't know it was a Harley until she called in the license plate. Was that after the stop?
No, that was before. She got behind the motorcycle, saw the license plate, called it in, and was told.
And then they said it's a Harley.
Yeah, it was registered.
And did they tell her anything else at that point?
Not that she said.
Okay. So
she
just.
Did they tell her who owned it?
I didn't hear that.
Did they tell her who owned the Harley?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
You knew it was registered to.
Right.
Mr. Ritchie and his wife.
Right.
Okay, and they didn't know anything about Mr. Ritchie. We have no testimony in the record about the officer knowing anything about Mr. Ritchie prior OWIs or anything like that.
Prior to the stop, no.
All right, thank you.
Okay. The second thing I want the court to be aware of is there's a red herring in this case. The red herring is that somehow Officer Meyer factored into her suspicion that this was pretty early in the season for motorcycles to be out and about, and it was pretty late at night for motorcycles to be out and about. She never testified to that. She was prompted to testify to that. Initially, she said, I stopped this motorcycle based on what the deputy told me, these five identifiers. The prosecutor, realizing she's not making a very good case for herself, then says, well, Officer Meyer, would this be kind of early in the season for motorcycles to be out and about? Oh, yeah, yeah, that too. And late at night, yeah, late at night. So that too. And I just want to say, I'm a private bar attorney that takes public defender post-conviction cases, and I read a lot of transcripts, and I read a lot of officer testimony, and this happens all the time. The officers come into court and are not prepared to testify. And they'll, forever they're saying, I don't recall, I'd have to look at my report, I need to look at my report. And I'm like, What, did you just wake up and discover you were supposed to give testimony today? You don't know the facts of your case. You don't. A person's liberty is at stake, and you're up here and you don't even know what you're talking about. And so inevitably, the prosecutors end up making the reasonable suspicion case for the witness by asking leading questions and developing the testimony so they can get a full record of what maybe would constitute reasonable suspicion. And that's the problem we have in this case. If you look at the transcript, you'll notice that Officer Meyer doesn't have very much to say. She stopped this motorcycle for one reason, and one reason only, was because it was a Harley Davidson. And she says she followed it for 2.5 blocks. If you look at the video, I think it was more like 4 blocks, just enough time for the report to come back on the registration. This is a Harley Davidson. As soon as she found that out, she's like, bang. She turned on the lights and pulled it over.
So, go ahead,
Justice.
All right, I was just going to say, do you concede that if some of the other identifiers had been there, so let's say it had been on Alderson Street, the car was driving erratically, or high rate of speed, that would constitute a basis for the stop?
Can you repeat that? I didn't get that.
I'm just asking if you concede when you're talking about the 5 identifiers, if there had been more than just that it was a Harley, that there could have been reasonable suspicion to stop.
If there had been more, but there wasn't more here.
Okay, thank you.
Would you need all those additional criteria? What if it wasn't still driving at a high rate of speed?
I would like to see them. Officer Meyer tells the court at the suppression hearing, in her mind, she's equating the fleeing motorcycle with the disabled motorcycle. And we get into this, the deputy was in a marked squad, so the motorcycle knew that, and he was fleeing. But in her mind, she's in a marked squad, and Mr. Ritchie is not fleeing from her. So that should have given her pause. She's like, because she's thinking the fleeing motorcycle is fleeing the deputy, but Mr. Ritchie isn't fleeing from her. So she, to me, prudence would say, we got radio communication. She should have said to the deputy, do you have any more information than what you gave me? What kind of Harley Davidson is this? Is it a Sportster, or is it a glider, or a fat boy, or what color is it? How many passengers are on it? Was a guy wearing a helmet? Something that she could have, because they have radio communication. I don't know why she didn't use that. This Ritchie wasn't dodging her. It wasn't
Do you agree that at the time of the stop, Ritchie had 7 prior driving under the influence convictions?
I believe that's the facts.
Okay,
yes.
And those facts were part of the registration on this vehicle, correct?
That I do not know. I don't know what she did. She didn't elaborate. She said she thought she used what some kind of onboard communication, that she didn't go through dispatch, but she didn't elaborate on what she all knew.
Okay, all right. If, let's just say for sake of discussion, that she didn't know that he had 7 OWIs prior to stopping him, but that was a fact known to the state because of the because of the records that the state keeps of past OWIs. So if that's a circumstance, does she get to rely on that knowledge of someone else in regard to looking at reasonable suspicion or probable cause?
I would say yes. I would think if the report came back.
She would have to know it, though, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's not just that someone at dispatch knows it. This is what the officer knows at the time.
Right.
An officer, in order to pull someone over, needs to believe that a crime has been committed, is being committed, or is about to be committed.
Right.
Okay, we have a doctrine that I think is in a lot of cases about shared information. And usually where I see it come up is that one officer knows something and the second officer knows something else, and we put them both together and say together they're sufficient. And that's kind of what I was wanting to look at with my question is, was the knowledge of the state that he had 7 prior OWIs a piece of information that can be put together with the information that the officer narrated at trial, can they be put together?
And my answer would be yes.
Okay.
If somebody knew it and relayed it to Officer Meyer.
Well, you said relate it to
her.
Yeah,
but not, I'm not getting to the relate it to Officer Meyer. I'm just saying if it was known by the state and Officer Meyer had what he was told by another officer, because that was not personal knowledge either, can those two pieces be put together to support reasonable suspicion? That's kind of my query.
Yes, and that's that collective knowledge doctrine or whatever. And that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say if Officer Meyer did know that he had seven priors, she could say, well, 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday night, he's going to be a .02 driver.
Right.
There's maybe a high chance that that he's been drinking, but those aren't the facts.
Okay,
even if
Officer Meyer knew, and I know these are not our facts, because Officer Meyer has no knowledge whatsoever at that point of the stop that this Richie has seven priors. But don't we still have to connect the stop to the motorcycle driven erratically? Like, why, she can't just stop a driver for .02 who's following the laws at night after following him for four blocks, can she?
No.
Okay,
no.
So there has to be some connection still. So
right.
If you don't have enough information that this is the Harley that we're talking about before, that there's not enough facts to connect this particular Harley to that particular Harley, which, by the way, they were different Harleys, right? This was
right.
Not the erratic driver.
Right.
So if there's not enough, it doesn't really matter if he's got eight priors or four priors or three priors, right?
It wouldn't. She still wouldn't have a reasonable suspicion to stop, but it would be part of her knowledge. She would say, okay, in my training and experience, Saturday night, you know, maybe.
But you'd still be here saying she didn't have reasonable suspicion to stop,
right.
Wouldn't you?
Right.
Attorney Zick, can you talk to us a little bit about the direction of the vehicle? It's my understanding that the broadcast was that the motorcycle that was seen driving erratically was going northbound.
Yes.
And that when the officer pulled Mr. Ritchie's Harley over, he was driving southeast.
Yes.
So can you just give me some understanding about how much time lapsed and why that should factor into our analysis?
Yes, and that's a good question, because Officer Meyer thinks this the motorcycle that the deputy is talking about is fleeing the deputy, okay, at a high rate of speed going north on Alderson Street. If you got a chance to look at that map that was in the case file, Alderson Street goes north, gets up to Schofield, and then Officer Meyer is traveling west on Schofield. Richie is traveling east on Schofield. She sees him on Willow Street, which is west of Alderson. So in her mind, Richie would have to go up Alderson, go left on Schofield, turn around and do 180 degrees to go east, where she could see him on Willow Street. That is the most improbable path for a motorcycle that's fleeing a police officer. Why would you go that way? You just wouldn't. And so she should have, in my mind, factored that in. That's another reason this motorcycle is probably not the same motorcycle.
Does the record reflect what the speed limit or limits were in this area?
It doesn't. I'm guessing it's 25 miles per hour. I'm guessing that off of watching the video, because it's traffic lights and cars seem to be moving pretty slowly through there.
Counsel,
but she said it was only 5 minutes.
Counsel, I understand earlier in the argument you talked about some of the testimony, that maybe the leading questions, those sorts of things. I understand that, and maybe that's a general frustration that you might have. However, the trial court did seem to credit the testimony of the officer and explicitly, noted that there were a few bikes around, it was a time where you wouldn't see many motorcycles out and about. So you're not asking us to disregard those findings, or you're not arguing that those are clearly erroneous, are you? Because I think otherwise, if you're not, for our purposes, we would need to accept those findings, correct?
No, I don't think you should accept them. If you look at the transcript, you'll see what I'm saying. The prosecutor is offering that testimony, and the officer Meyer is just agreeing with it, but she's not saying that was in my head when I pulled Mr. Ritchie over. It's in my head today because you told me it should be in my head today. I'm on the witness stand.
Well, the law in this, if somebody testifies, yes to a question that's asked and a trial court makes that factual finding, our law is that we will defer to those findings unless they are clearly erroneous. That is how we review things. I also wanted to just focus on your second point, though. Normally, a reasonable suspicion analysis isn't just based on what the officer thought or was thinking about at the time. It's pretty black-letter law that even if a law enforcement officer had a reason that was different or was mistaken, that doesn't mean that there, wasn't reasonable suspicion. Do you agree with that? I understand your argument is it's still not met here, but...
Well, I guess what I'm saying is be mindful of what the officer's testimony is versus what the prosecutor's testimony is.
Sure. But the trial court did make a finding, right? I mean, the trial court talks about there weren't many bikes on the road at night. I think for our purposes, we have to take that as true unless there's some evidence that shows that that's clearly wrong, correct?
Well, there were three. Could the evidence possibly be that we know that three motorcycles on this date and time? There was the disabled one. There was whichever one was driving erratically and quickly, and then there was this one.
Yeah, that's my point, to say so there wasn't a lot of motorcycles out and about this time of year. There could have been three within 5 minutes within this little kind of half-mile area. So
getting back to the whole idea of there's not a lot of motorcycles out, isn't that something somebody would have to knowledge of in their experience, like they pay attention to how many motorcycles are out and about or when motorcycles go out? I mean, is that a fact we can just all assume that nobody in Wisconsin takes their motorcycle out at the end of April? I mean, wouldn't they need someone to say, I've been doing this, I've been following, I know that there's this many motorcycles that they don't really come out until later in the year or they're not usually driving at night? Or I mean, I personally wouldn't know that information.
I agree with you. This is the prosecutor's testimony. This is what he is developing for reasonable suspicion. And the circuit court kind of runs with it and says, I agree, this time of year there wouldn't be a lot of motorcycles out and about.
Was the officer typically on a desk job or something?
No. I think she was a patrol officer. She had come on duty at 6 o'clock. This was April 28th, 2018. She said she came on duty at 6 p.m. and the stop was at 11 p.m. I don't know.
So it's an officer that's on the road.
Did she see many motorcycles? Who would know that? Only she would know that.
Right.
The defense attorney implies that there was motorcycle clubs having rallies or something during the day, but that was never really established.
Can you talk to me about Risley a little bit and tell me why this case is not on all fours with that?
Yeah, I think the distinguishing factor in Risley is, in Risley, the homeowner who called 911 stays on the line with the dispatcher and tells the dispatcher where the shooter is traveling. The homeowner never loses sight of this intruder. I don't understand the lay of the land in Risley, but he's telling him he's traveling on 6 Mile Road. He's going this direction. Now he's up to Middle Road. He's taking a left on Middle Road, and that's where the officer there intercepts the intruder. And so the officer doesn't have to figure out, is this the right vehicle or the wrong vehicle? Because they never lost communication. That's a big difference. We don't have that here. I mean, the deputy Villaquisto, lost sight of the fleeing motorcycle, and Officer Meyer doesn't know any more than what she's been told.
Counsel, so, if there had been a, if the report was a red Honda Civic, okay, same facts, and let's say the officer testified that there's, she didn't see any other red Honda Civics out, it's not something she sees all the time, and then she drives and sees the red Honda Civic driving at a normal rate of speed. Are you saying that, you know, the officer would need to confirm it was the same vehicle before reasonable suspicion could, you know, that was the reported vehicle before the officer could initiate a Terry stop?
No, I'm not saying that. I think these kind of cases happen frequently where there's a report, be on the lookout for, and they rely on the knowledge they've been given, and they're trying to figure out, is this the motorcycle I'm looking for? I think they happen. I just don't think she had enough identifiers here.
Right.
To make this happen.
And the idea, so maybe if it was, you know, a red, you know, Corvette that you don't see too often, maybe everyone would say that's fine. It's pretty clearly the car. Maybe if it was, you know, a black pickup truck, maybe not. Maybe there's enough of those out. And so I guess, is your argument a Harley in this area isn't specific enough?
I don't think so. In the state of Wisconsin, I think there's just too many Harley Davidsons. That doesn't make this a unique. She should have said, oh, this has got to be it. You know, there are just too many Harley Davidsons out and about.
I mean, the test is, would a reasonable law enforcement officer reasonably suspect? Right? That's the test. That's the legal test. Reasonably suspect that this was the car, right? This was the one that was radioed in.
Right.
This was the motorcycle. So in some sense, how many Harleys there are makes a big difference. That's why the officer's testimony, I understand you might have felt it was leading, but the trial court does seem to rely on that and credit that and suggest there weren't many motorcycles out, weren't many Harleys out. That was pretty specific in its view. And again, obviously we have some evidence in the record, as Justice Kurofsky pointed out, that there were more than one out, so that complicates the picture a bit, makes this a close case.
Yeah. And the thing, too, is maybe I'll let you know, or I want you to think about, the stop was April 28th, 2018. The suppression hearing was held in January of 2020. Officer Meyer said, I've been a police officer for 2.5 years. That's what she says in January. So it means at the time of the stop, she didn't have a lot of experience. She had probably just beginning her law enforcement career. So what she knew about reasonable suspicion or...
The law is not what... I mean, the law is what a reasonable law enforcement officer would reasonably suspect. It's an objective test. So even if she wasn't well-trained or was wrong, that doesn't necessarily change our analysis at this
stage. I think, though, in post, didn't we say that the crucial question is whether the facts of the case would warrant a reasonable police officer in light of his or her training and experience to suspect that the individual has committed, was committing, or is about to commit a crime?
Right.
And doesn't this also go to what she would have known about how many motorcycles are out and about? I mean, if she's been on patrol for all of, like, it sounds like 6 months?
6 months, yeah. And
during which it was summer?
Yeah.
Or I guess part winter, end of summer, winter. But wouldn't necessarily, not in April, right?
Is there anything in the record about the weather conditions? Because I don't know that, unlike the boating season in Wisconsin, where there's sort of definite start and end dates, I think...
There was nothing about the weather in the record.
I think motorcyclists kind of look at, well, have we had some rains that would wash the salt off of the roadways and thereby make it safe for motorcycles to travel, not so much, oh, it's not May yet, I can't take my bike out.
What I know, just from my experience, people who are motorcycle riders get out as early as they can, you know. They like to get their bikes out and ride around. So, but that's not a fact in the record either. That's just my observation.
It's just a fact.
Yeah.
I understand that sentiment. The state has the burden of showing reasonable suspicion here. Do you have an opinion as to what level that burden is? Is it by the preponderance of evidence? Is it by clear, satisfactory, and convincing?
Preponderance, I believe.
You think it's preponderance?
Yes.
And do you, that's a good thing to believe. Is there a reason you believe that?
I think I read that.
Okay. I'm going to ask your opposing counsel the same question and see if he's read the same stuff. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is that it?
Thank you very much. I wish you could keep coming back. All right.
May it please the court. The reasonable suspicion test is a low bar, and that's because we're not talking about an arrest or a search of somebody's home. We're talking about a Terry stop, which is only a minor infringement on personal liberty.
Except you still have to, you just can't pull over somebody because you feel like it. It has to be based upon something. Do you agree or disagree that this was the same motorcycle that the first officer saw?
We now know after the fact that it was not the same motorcycle the first officer saw.
So what exactly did the officer have at the time the officer pulled this motorcycle over?
The officer had, first of all, the fact that this was a Harley-Davidson motorcycle.
There are a lot of those in Wisconsin, so
there are a lot of those in Wisconsin, but we have a lot of facts in this case that made that description highly specific in this scenario. The officer testified that it was late at night and that traffic was very light, so there were not many vehicles out on the road in general. It was also early in the motorcycle season, so in this officer's experience, there were not many motorcycles out this time of year. This was also a particular night where the officer had been, I believe, 5 hours into her shift and had not seen any motorcycles. So when she hears a broadcast that a motorcycle is traveling north at a high rate of speed on Alderson Street, and then just 5 minutes later, she spots a motorcycle a bit north of that, right near Alderson Street, he reasonably suspects, okay, this could be the same motorcycle.
Counsel, do you know if there's anything in the record about what the speed limit or limits were in this area?
I don't believe there's anything in the record about what the speed limit was.
Would you agree it's probably something around, I don't want you to guess, but given the nature of the neighborhood, 25 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour?
Given the nature of the area, that's probably accurate. I would say about 25.
By my calculations, within 5 minutes, if this vehicle were traveling somewhere in the vicinity of that speed limit, the motorcycle would have gone a couple of miles, potentially. So how does that factor into the reasonable suspicion analysis? Because to find this vehicle after 5 minutes sounds like a short time, but when you're traveling on a motorcycle or in a car, you can go pretty far in 5 minutes.
Sure, and I don't think the exact location that the motorcycle was found is what makes this case, but I think where he was found is consistent with Deputy De Acquista's report.
But if he were fleeing, I'm struggling with why or how it would be reasonable to expect the motorcycle 5 minutes after the fact to be within a half a mile of the scene of the crime.
Well, 2 points about that, Your Honor. First, if a motorcyclist was fleeing and had gotten away from an officer, which appears to have been the case, I would suspect that the motorcyclist wouldn't just continue speeding in perpetuity, that he may pull off of the road at some point. And I think this is one of the locations that is consistent with Deputy DiAquisto's report. There could be others, but this is also consistent.
But he's going the wrong direction. So he's fleeing, and then he's... It doesn't make any sense. Because the report is that he's going... So the report is that he's going northbound, but when he's pulled over, he's going southeast on Schofield Road. So in addition to what Justice Rebecca Bradley's saying, that he would have, and I haven't done her math. It sounds like a really bad algebra equation. Like if a motorcycle is leaving Wausau going 25 miles an hour, and the wind is whatever, where would it be? So I'm glad she did the math for me, but I'm happy to adopt her math. I mean, so not only should the motorcycle, if it's fleeing, be 2 miles away, but now it's also going the wrong direction when the officer pulls it over.
That's correct, Your Honor. The motorcyclist could have turned around or simply made a turn. Additionally, Alderson Street continues north for a little bit after the area on the map, and then it turns to the west and intersects with another street that heads down south. So alternatively, he could have driven that way. There are a few reasons he could have ended up...
But how would he get back to Schofield? I'm looking at the map right now. How would he have gotten... He would have had to go back to that intersection and then be driving the other way.
Or turned around on a different street. There are a number of ways he could have gotten there.
It doesn't sound very consistent with...
But it gets back to another point, which is that the reasonable suspicion test, it's about reasonableness. This officer had not seen a motorcycle all night. It's not a time of year she typically sees motorcycles. 5 minutes after the report, she sees a motorcycle in the general area that she was told to look out for one. And she has a limited time to act. I don't think the reasonable suspicion test would require her to pull out a map and a calculator and try to calculate exactly where the speeding motorcycle would have been.
Counsel, one of the facts, and we only have a small set of facts here, but one of the facts is light traffic. You're just talking about that. And yet, the facts seem to undermine part of that rationale in that within 5 minutes, within a half mile of the area, there were Harley-Davidson motorcycles. One was disabled, one was fleeing an officer, and this one. So it seems to me that it contradicts the sense that, well, there weren't many Harleys around. So help me with that. Help me bring that together.
Well, first of all, there were not three motorcycles, there were two motorcycles. We know, I believe this is in the probable cause portion of the criminal complaint, that Deputy DiAquisto later told Officer Meyer that the disabled motorcycle and the speeding motorcycle were the same one. Now, that was not, I don't think there's any proof that that was a fact within her knowledge at the time of the stop, but we do know that after the fact.
Go ahead.
But that gets to my larger point that...
No, not you. Go ahead. That question. Go ahead.
Thank you. I don't understand. Because the officer is saying there is a motorcycle that is speeding and driving erratically. I thought that she made that report as she was attending to a motorcycle that was disabled.
So the first officer saw a disabled motorcycle. A couple of seconds later cleared that without explanation, and then... shortly thereafter reported that there was a speeding and disabled motorcycle.
So it was speeding and disabled?
Well, it apparently was not disabled.
Well, let's get the facts right and help me with this. I thought that the report was speeding and erratically driving, but didn't have any reference at that time to it being disabled.
That's correct.
Okay.
But counsel, the officer, just to your point, was While we may know after the fact there were at least a couple, or maybe three, but maybe two motorcycles out, the officer here testified that she had not seen any other motorcycles. And so for all she knew, when she pulled over Mr. Ritchie, this was the only motorcycle she had seen or that she knew existed. And she, you know, and your argument is she had reason to believe it was the same one that was reported.
That's correct. And the reasonable suspicion test is only based on the facts within the officer's knowledge at the time of the stop. At the time of the stop, the reason she made the stop was that she believed this was the same motorcycle. If she had known at the time that this was not the same motorcycle, then of course the stop would not have been a good stop.
Counsel, at the outset of your comments, you indicated that reasonable suspicion is a low standard, and I agree with that. But I want to know how low we can go. And so you have the burden of proof to show that there was reasonable suspicion, or that is, a reasonable officer, and I'm looking for the test from the case of Post, that a reasonable officer essentially would, the objective standard, would believe that the suspect was committing or was about to commit a crime or wrongdoing. So you have the burden to show reasonable suspicion, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, what standard or level of burden is that? Is that the middle standard, the low standard, or the high standard?
Now, it's a difficult question because we have two sort of competing standards here. The state has the burden of proof. However, the state has the burden of proving a reasonable suspicion, which the reasonable suspicion test itself is far below the preponderance of the evidence standard.
Well, I say boldly, in Wisconsin, we have three levels. Preponderance, I might be wrong, but that's my understanding of the law. Preponderance, clear, satisfactory, and convincing, and reasonable doubt. Are you telling me there's another standard that's unique to Terry stops?
No, I'm not, and I believe the state has the burden of proving those facts by the second standard, but the ultimate reasonable suspicion test.
And just to be clear, when you say the second standard, this is only if you know or you think you know the answer. You know, I don't want this to be too much of a guessing contest. You say the second standard. What do you understand to be the second standard? The middle standard or something else?
I believe the middle standard, Your Honor.
Clear, satisfactory, and convincing.
And I believe that the state did that in this case.
Okay. Now, what do you base that on? Your choice. I mean, if you know, you know.
I base that on the factual findings of the circuit court here, Your Honor. There was a lot of talk about how the prosecutor was supposedly prompted Officer Meyer in her testimony.
Well, you're answering, it sounds to me, like why you think this clear, satisfactory, and convincing standard was met. But my question is different. My question is, what citation, what authority can you give me, if any, to support your contention that the burden here is clear, satisfactory, and convincing?
I don't have a citation offhand, Your Honor.
And that's okay. You know, yeah. I don't know the answer. That's why I'm asking the question, you know.
Counsel, you were going to tell us about the factual findings of the circuit court that you're relying on. Can you do that, please?
Yes. First of all, I don't really think this characterization that the prosecutor basically testified for Officer Meyer is quite accurate. So I want to walk through some of just the questions and answers that were asked.
What page are you on?
I am on, this is from page 6 of the hearing transcript. The prosecutor asked Officer Meyer, how would you describe traffic at the time? Traffic, I recall, was very light. Had you observed any motorcycles around that time? No. They go through some more of this. Had you observed many motorcycles at that time of year? No. Then, eventually, why did you make the stop? She says, because it was a Harley-Davidson, and in addition, it was a time of night, a time of year when motorcycles were uncommon. I had not seen any motorcycles that night.
Where are you now? I'm not seeing what you're
reading. Page 12. When she ultimately answers why she made the stop. But the most important thing we have here is that the circuit court's findings of fact are reviewed only for clear error. And Officer Meyer explicitly testified that she not only knew all these facts, but relied on all these facts, and the circuit court found that credible. So in order to overturn that, this court would have to find that it was clearly erroneous for the circuit court to conclude the officer was not lying here. I just don't see any basis in the record to do that. Additionally, the reasonable suspicion test is not just about the officer's subjective motivation. It's about whether the facts known to the officer would allow a reasonable officer to suspect that this was the same motorcycle.
Anything else you'd like to add? Any other questions?
If this court has no more questions, I'll yield the rest of my time and I'll ask this court to affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, rebuttal.
I guess I don't have a lot more to add to the discussion, but to summarize, Officer Meyer knew one thing about Mr. Ritchie. He was riding a Harley-Davidson. That's all she knew that matched the description of the vehicle she was supposed to be searching for.
Do you agree, counsel, that we are to accept the findings of the circuit court unless they are clearly erroneous?
Yes, yes. And what I just wanted to point out is, if you look at the transcript and you see this leading question and the prosecutor's developing a case for the witness and then the court buys into it, we're sort of stuck with it. But I'm unhappy about that result, and it's what happened here. I mean, she didn't say, oh, you know, in my experience, not many motorcycles are out in April of the year, so this was unusual to see one. She wasn't even thinking that until she was prompted to say, oh, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, maybe the time of year was a little early to see many motorcycles.
Counsel, could you address this dispute about, and obviously it's maybe a bit less relevant for our purposes because we care about what the officer knew at the time, but this three motorcycles versus two and how you read the record, I just want to get this straight for us.
My understanding was there could have been three. Officer Meyer thought the fleeing motorcycle was quite possibly the disabled motorcycle. I think that was her testimony, but it was never made clear to anybody. We had this disabled motorcycle up on Schofield near Highway 51. We have the one on Alderson Street, and we have Mr. Ritchie traveling east on Schofield. So there could have been three in this half-mile area.
But it's not clear that there was. You're saying that it's certainly reasonable that, well, do you think the officer thought that the disabled and the fleeing one were the same thing?
That's what she thought, I guess.
Yeah.
But maybe not. Well, because for the disabled motorcycle, I don't know. It was disabled, the deputy stops to assist it, and then clears the scene without explanation. But he never said it was fleeing away from me. He says the fleeing motorcycle he spots down on Alderson Street, just north of Jelinek. So to me, it's probably not the same motorcycle.
But as far as we know about what Officer Meyer knew, that there was only one motorcycle out at night, and the one she stopped when she pulled over was the same one that had been reported as fleeing and or disabled.
What's your question about that?
Is that right? That as far as she knew, there was only one motorcycle out that night when she made the stop?
I don't know what she was thinking. I really don't. I really don't. You know, it was a Saturday in April, late April. Remember, she's testifying 2 years after the fact. And does she remember how many motorcycles she saw that night? I don't know. I don't think any of us can testify how many motorcycles we saw today so far. They're just so common that why would you remember them? You know? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, we've concluded oral arguments in this case. Court is adjourned on Ritchie. We will reconvene in a few minutes to hear our second case this morning.
This is a reminder to be here at 9:30, and I was like, reminder. No, it was just an email.